And FM, Seattle.
CBS News. Bargainers for the United Auto Workers and Ford Motor Company recessed their marathon negotiating session just over an hour ago, with tentative settlement on a new contract reported imminent. I'm Mike Stanley reporting on the CBS Radio Network. The negotiations now are proceeding under a news blackout, the traditional sign that agreement is within striking distance. More from Rob Moore in Detroit at CBS Radio affiliate WWJ.
There's still optimism that a settlement is imminent in the 20-day-old auto workers' strike against Ford Motor Company. Well, that settlement did not come on Sunday, as some had expected. The day was the beginning of a marathon bargaining session, a sure sign that the big push is underway to settle their differences. Negotiators met over 15 hours, and spokesmen for both sides said there would be no statement of any sort. Bargainers will resume talks about 9:30 Monday morning. The union sources report the two sides are just a few issues and a few inches away from an agreement and expect that tentative settlement sometime Monday. Rob Marr for CBS News, Detroit.
President Ford leaves for California on Monday after receiving a briefing on foreign policy Sunday at the White House from Secretary of State Kissinger. That was in preparation for Wednesday's second broadcast presidential debate to be held in San Francisco. The League of Women Voters has decided National Public Radio's Pauline Frederick will serve as moderator. The panelists will be Max Frankel of the New York Times, Henry Truett of the Baltimore Sun, and Richard Valeriani of NBC News. Jimmy Carter heads for Denver, Colorado Monday, then goes to San Francisco in the evening, scheduled to arrive there within half an hour of the time President Ford is expected. Carter was in Plains, Georgia on Sunday. He met there for 4 hours with former Defense Secretary James Schlesinger. He was fired by President Ford a year ago for his criticism of administration foreign policy and detente. Agriculture Secretary Earl Butz remains in the eye of an intensifying political hurricane, reportedly weighing his options after drawing a severe reprimand from President Ford for his prejudicial remarks about blacks. An aide to the secretary said on Saturday he spoke with an unnamed presidential aide, and the secretary mentioned the possibility of resigning, but decided to sleep on it. President Ford's 20-year-old son, Stephen, making a campaign appearance in Casper, Wyoming, said of the Butz remark, "That type of language and philosophy should not have been used in my father's administration." White House sources indicated Saturday Mr. Ford was ready to demand Butz's resignation if the controversy widens. Donald Brock, a former executive assistant to Butz, now chairman of the California Farmers for Ford organization, said he spoke to the secretary Sunday morning and urged him to stay in his present post.
"I've talked to quite a few farmers over the last 2 days on the phone, not only in this state but in other states, and they all feel as I do that it would be counterproductive if Secretary Butz were to leave at this time, inasmuch as he's made his apology, and the president, I assume, is... properly reprimanded him. I don't see what useful purpose would be served if he were to leave. And the farmers that I've talked to feel that it would be detrimental in terms of farm votes for the president."
Campaigning Sunday in Manchester, New Hampshire, where he wrapped up a four-state, three-day New England tour, Republican vice presidential candidate Bob Dole said he hasn't had a chance yet to weigh whether the Butz racial slur is a liability to the GOP ticket. Wisconsin's Democratic Governor Patrick Lucey called for Butz's ouster, saying it's unthinkable that President Ford would wait for a political assessment before acting. Democratic Senator Edward Kennedy said in Newton, Massachusetts Sunday night that the president has waited too long in requesting Butz's resignation.
"I think all Americans expect not only competency in terms and knowledge of the particular field they have responsibility, but they're also representing the American people in those positions. And Mr. Butz, in terms of being able to represent a very significant group of our people, has lost that degree of competence. And I would think he would want to resign himself."
West German Chancellor Helmut Schmidt's left-liberal coalition eked out a narrow victory according to preliminary official returns from Sunday's general election. Their lead in the lower house of parliament is down to 8 seats from the 46-seat edge held previously. More after this.
The American and National League playoffs began in 1969, and each game has its share of memories. Remember the American League team that scored the most runs in a playoff game? Baltimore did it twice in 69 and 70, with 11 runs each time against Minnesota. Know which player holds the American League record for stolen bases in a playoff competition? The Oakland A's, Bert Campaneris, with a total of 6. This year, the league championships are sure to roll up more memories for the fans and for the record books. And you can be there for it all with CBS Radio Sports. Starting October 9th, Ernie Harwell and Ned Martin will bring you the play-by-play of all American League games, while Jerry Coleman with Ralph Kiner cover the National League competitions. All the games, afternoon and evening, of these two best-out-of-five playoffs. And that's not all. CBS Radio Sports will broadcast every game of the World Series, too. That's plenty of baseball, and it starts October 9th with the League Championship Series over many of these CBS Radio network stations.
Dutch honorary consul Eric Lupin, kidnapped by left-wing guerrillas 20 months ago, has been freed in Colombia and is reported in good health. Police confirmed the release and said Lupin, who holds dual Swiss and Canadian citizenship, walked out of the mountain area where he had been held by the guerrillas of the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia. They kidnapped him on the night of January 31st, 1975. Mike Stanley, CBS News.
KIXI in Seattle. Stay tuned for the CBS Mystery Theater.
The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... G. Marshall. To my surprise, I discovered that it was Lord Byron, in his famous poem Don Juan, who first said, "For truth is always strange, stranger than fiction." Others, I'm sure, have said it in their own ways. Edmund Burke, the great British statesman and orator, phrased it, "Truth lags behind fiction." And Bob Ripley, the cartoonist, made a life work and a fortune out of this simple statement. The following story is fiction, but it is founded on a strange truth.
That nice little lady, she couldn't commit a murder over a cat.
Let me tell you something, Detective Trout. Most murders are committed by otherwise nice people. And motive? Sometimes all it takes is a hot night or a sneeze or the wrong words put together. Don't you ever forget it, Ms. Detective. The right time, the right place, the right circumstances. Anyone can commit homicide.
Mystery drama, Checkmate, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by Ian Martin and stars Robert Dryden and Marion Haley. It is sponsored in part by Buick Motor Division.
I'll be back shortly with Act One.
You know, some cars that are economical aren't terribly exciting.
This certainly isn't terribly exciting.
Well, you can't have everything.
And some cars that are fun aren't very economical.
This certainly isn't very economical.
Well, you can't have everything.
Ah, but the Opel Isuzu is different. It has things like a hefty overhead cam engine, rack and pinion steering, reclining bucket seats, and a short-throw four-speed transmission.
Gee, a short-throw sounds like fun.
Certainly does.
Want to try it?
Certainly do.
good one. Now I'll throw you.
And besides all that fun, the Opel Isuzu also gives you mileage you wouldn't believe. According to the EPA, with standard four-cylinder engine and four-speed transmission, the Opel Isuzu gets an estimated 23 miles per gallon in the city and a big fat 36 on the highway, bearing in mind, of course, the fact that your mileage may vary.
Bob, we just passed another gas station.
Yeah, and wasn't it fun?
The exciting, economical Opel Isuzu at your Buick Opel dealers.
Have you winterized your car yet? This is Gene King for the Council of Better Business Bureaus. You know, with winter not that far away, many motorists are looking for bargains in antifreeze products. But don't be fooled by so-called inexpensive solutions, which promise to do the same thing as regular antifreeze. These solutions usually contain methanol, a solution which boils away quickly. You could be hurting your car's engine rather than helping it run smoothly. You know, times are hard, but be sure you don't have to pay two prices. One for the so-called bargain antifreeze, and another for real antifreeze when the first solution boils away. Why not have your regular service station attendant check your antifreeze? If the mixture needs to be changed, don't buy just any antifreeze product. Check the label first. And while you're at it, it's a good idea to have the hoses and connections in the cooling system checked, too. This is a common trouble spot in winter.
Detective Sergeant Digger Bowles of the 4th Precinct is looking forward to his approaching retirement from the force. In his nearly 30 years in the police department, over 20 of them as a plainclothes detective, he's been happy and proud in his work. But he's a man of habit, and change irritates him more and more. Most of all, this new breed of officers. He doesn't particularly appreciate it when they come in a form that is anathema to him in the hallowed precincts of the station house.
A 4th Precinct, Detective Trout.
Help! Help! I've been murdered!
Well, hold it a minute. Who are you?
Saul Fender.
Address and phone number?
What? 8745.
Wait, was that a 5 or a 9?
A 5.
I didn't get that last.
Please, I'm on Avenue B. I can't.
Mr. Fender. Mr. Fender, are you all right? Hello?
What you got there, detective?
The big one, Sergeant Foles. Homicide.
Who says?
The guy on the phone.
What guy? Who?
Saul Fender. He just got murdered.
Who got murdered?
Saul Fender, the man on the phone.
The victim called up to say he was being murdered.
No, that he just had been. I got the address. We'd better go over there right away.
Now, wait a minute. You mean he's still on the phone?
He was. He isn't anymore. Here, listen.
Hello? Hello? Mr. Fender? Mr. Fender?
You see, he was talking, and then I heard him fall, but he said he'd been murdered.
I don't know, Trout. My feet are killing me. I just hope this isn't somebody's idea of a joke. All right, come on. Let's go see.
Why don't you use the siren?
Because I ain't no show-off. Besides, it makes too much noise. Disturbs people, including me.
Yes, but it's important to get there.
We'll get there.
Fast.
Just as fast.
Well, how do you know?
Because I've been driving this city just this way for
25 years, and it's always been good enough.
Smart, huh?
Mm-hmm.
What do you know? Mm-hmm. You're just beginning. You think this is a game?
No, I don't. I'm just enthusiastic about my job, and I'd like to be good at it.
Just like. Don't enthuse.
You don't like me, do you, Digger?
Did I say that?
Well, you don't have to. You think I'm just a wet behind the ears young punk.
Don't tell me what I think, Detective Trout.
Well, then you tell me.
I think... I know you're a dame. That's all.
And dames don't have any place in your thinking.
Not on the force. Well, not in homicide anyway.
Why? Women get killed too.
Yeah, that's right. So maybe it's just lucky we're at the scene of the crime that's already been committed. All right, come on. Let's go play cop. Now, just let me get this straight, Miss...
Mrs. Applebaum.
Oh, yeah. Mm. You say you're out walking your dog.
Cat.
Cat. Yeah. Cat? Walking a cat?
Sure. He likes his evening stroll, Morris does. What do you think? He looks like a dog, that cat?
You see a leash, you figure a dog at the other end.
And you're a detective?
Maybe I'm too busy looking at that weapon in your other hand. What's that for?
This neighborhood. A person isn't safe, even if it's still light. Nobody bothers me no more since I stuck a couple of them with this.
What is it?
It's a hat pin.
Madam, that's a dangerous weapon.
You have to tell me.
Mrs. Applebaum, how come when we got here, you were with the dead man?
Well, he was the super. I had a complaint.
And you usually just walk right into his apartment to complain?
Listen, Miss Cop, usually I can't even get him to answer the bell with all the things need fixing. Plumbing, heat, the cockroaches. And yesterday, even the toilets wouldn't flush.
You don't like Mr. Fender?
Anybody doesn't like cats can't be any good. God forgive me for saying that, and the poor man dead.
He was dead when you came in.
Just like you see him.
What time was this?
Oh, I guess a few minutes after 9. I got a watch, but I couldn't see without my glasses.
How did you get in, Mrs. Applebaum?
Well, I just turned the handle and the door opened.
So anyone could have got in, huh?
I guess, if they had the new key.
What new key?
Well, to the outside door. Well, we got a new lock. Burglar-proof, it's supposed to be. I'd still like to see the day.
Well, how many people have keys to the outside lot?
Oh, just the people in the building.
Unless they had copies made.
Oh, first off, you can't. You got to send to the company. And second, we all just got them this morning.
Who's all? I mean, who else is in the building?
Oh, well, you see, there's that Dreiser person on the first floor back. Me, second floor front. And Miss Dimby, second back. And the doctor on third floor back.
The doctor?
Oh, that's what we all call Mr. Porter. Oh, is he smart. He plays chess with 8, 10 people at a time and wins from them all. Yeah, right in the window there at Boardwalk and 52nd Street.
He does what?
Yeah, I know where she means. It's an amusement palace. Pinball machine, skeet ball, shooting gallery, and Professor Porter, the human chess machine. You pay to play him.
Mm-hmm. Mrs. Applebaum.
Yes, honey.
There are 6 apartments in this building. Who occupies the other two?
Well, the first floor front, that's Mr. Kelly with the birds. He had to go back in the hospital again, so I'm caring for them.
Yeah. But what about the 6th one?
Oh, that's Mr. Brilliantine.
Brilliantine?
You know him? Lance Brilliantine. He's an actor person.
What does he do? Hair commercials?
Oh, no. He's with the children's theater now. They do fairy stories. He just flew up to Boston, and he's looking to sublet. He has the whole top floor through.
That's nice. A little nest in the treetops. Well, thanks, Mrs. Applebaum. You go on up to your apartment and stick around. We might want to question you again.
Oh, I'm not going anywhere. But what about poor Mr. Fender?
He ain't going anywhere either.
Yeah, but shouldn't he have a doctor?
The only one he'll need is a medical examiner.
Oh.
How he died, that's up to the ME. Now, you run along, huh?
Oh, yes, of course, Sergeat.
Hey, watch that thing.
My hat pin? Oh, don't worry. I know how to handle this. Ah, come along, Morris. Just don't look at Mr. Fender like that. Yes, I know you didn't like him because he was so nasty to you, but you have the last laugh because you have 9 lives and he only had 1.
Think she could have done it?
Done what?
The murder.
What murder? All we know is we got a guy who's dead.
Oh, but he said on the phone.
Who said? You don't even know if it was Fender's voice you heard, or if it was that he was telling the truth. Now, look, let's wait till we have a case before we get all head up.
Yes, Digger, but if he wasn't murdered, then how could...
Maybe he had a stroke or a heart attack. Maybe he was some kind of a nut. Hey, Detective Trout, don't touch that body till the doc checks him out. You want to do something? Here.
What?
Chalk. Draw a picture of the way he's laying. Then let's you and me take a look-see if anything else is disturbed besides the late Mr. Fender. Okay, Detective Trout, start her up.
Where are we going?
Back to the precinct.
What about the homicide?
Well, a guy died, that's all.
Of what?
Doc says a brain hemorrhage.
But what caused it?
He doesn't know. At least till an autopsy. Probably natural causes.
I don't believe it. The man said on the telephone
Look,
that...
Look, do me a favor, will you? Leave it lay. We got nothing to go on. No evidence of forcible entry, no evidence of robbery. Look at all the dough he had in the desk drawer.
We could have checked out the other people in the house.
I did that. Nobody home.
Or at least not answering their bells.
All right, come on, come on. Now, let's move it.
You could tell by his face.
What?
His face. Mr. Fender's face. His eyes wide open like they were accusing whoever it was. I wonder how he was killed.
Maybe somebody said boo to him too loud and frightened him to death.
It isn't funny.
No. Now, what is funny is a rookie detective who can't forget she's a woman and has to get big romantic notions her first case is murder one instead of some poor old geezer scared to death of dying but having to do it anyway. Now, come on. Let's not go looking for trouble, detective. You're going to find out plenty of it gets handed to us for free.
I'm sorry, Sergeant.
Oh, don't mind me, kid. Doesn't matter how many times you look at one, I still don't like to see no one dead.
Did the doctor say anything about the mark on his eyelid?
What? What mark on what? His eyes were open. How could you see a mark on the lid?
It was creepy. The way he was staring, and I tried to close his eyes. I just started to pull down the right eyelid. Then you wouldn't let me touch him, and there was a little mark there.
What kind of mark?
Well, just a little red mark, like, well, maybe somebody, something, bit him. I don't know. He jabbed a pencil by mistake, or I don't know, something sharp. Maybe like, you know, when you get a penicillin shot from the doctor.
All right, take the next left, Trout, and hit that gas pedal. And turn on a siren, too.
Where are we going?
The hospital. I want to have a talk with that doc, and fast. Needle, huh?
Well, you're not thinking of Mrs. Applebaum's hatpin.
What else?
Oh, that nice little lady for what? A quarrel about heat or the plumbing or a cat?
Let me tell you something, detective. Most murders are committed by nice people who just flip a screw suddenly and go berserk. Sometimes all it takes is a hot night or a sneeze or the wrong words put together. No, sir. I mean, Ms. Detective, the right time, the right place, the right circumstances, anyone can commit homicide.
So you do think this is a homicide after all?
I don't know, Trout. Well, let the doctor tell us that.
The unmarked car hurtles through the city streets, traffic clearing for its wailing siren. In the passenger seat, Sergeant Digger Bowles is no longer relaxed, but sits forward, as though driving himself. Beside him, Detective Marion Trout is tense, and more than a little scared at the reaction to what her observant eyes have seen. I shall return shortly with Act Two.
Check the seat covers in that blue four-wheeler.
A lot of people are playing around with CBs for the first time, but these are not toys. At Regency, we make precision radio equipment, CB radios you can depend on, because you never know when you'll need one.
Breaker, breaker. Emergency.
Regency. We're worth listening to. For CBs, monitor scanners, marine, business, and...
I'm Billy
Billie Jean King. I want to talk about the United Nations Children's Fund. UNICEF's vital task is to prepare millions of today's children to become useful, productive adults in tomorrow's world. If the coming generations can be liberated from the poverty, disease, and ignorance that bind them, the world will be a better place. Help support UNICEF in its enormous job of protecting and training today's children for the challenges of the years to come. Write UNICEF, United Nations, New York 10017 for information.
Maybe someday, the science of genetics will be so advanced that every child will be born without handicaps, with perfectly functioning minds and bodies. Maybe someday. But today, there are 7 million handicapped children, and they need special education to develop their full potential as human beings. In this country, every child has the right to the kind of education he needs, regardless of his handicaps. Yet millions are not getting it. If you have a child who is handicapped, physically, mentally, or emotionally, we have information that can help. Write Closer Look, Box 1492, Washington, D.C., 20013. Closer Look is a free service of the United States Office of Education. Write Closer Look, Box 1492, Washington, D.C., 20013. A public service message by this station for the United States Office of Education.
For many of us, death, the inevitable last rite, is a feast or sorrowing already arranged. But for countless others, it is the accident which was never expected. And there is nothing tidy about closing the house of life. Saul Fender, who was he? What was he? Who is left to mourn him? And most of all, how did he come to die? While Sergeant Digger Bowles and Detective Marion Trout wait at the hospital for the ME's report, some of this is resolved.
Where have you been, Sergeant?
The autopsy room, waiting for results. Nothing yet. What'd you dig up?
A sketchy, just a sort of outline.
Draw it for me.
Okay, Saul Fender was 67. No relatives, retired on Social Security. He got the basement apartment in return for servicing the building. His wife died a few years ago, and after that, I gather he didn't care too much about anything. He kind of died with her.
Did he gamble?
No sign of it.
Other women?
Oh, come on. He was a sad little man all alone. He kept to himself, minded his own business, and like the old story, never did anyone no harm.
Maybe. All right, the deceased is on the autopsy table. I got nothing to say until... All right, I'll take it. I said I'd be at this extension. Hello. Yeah, this is Detective Sergeant Bowles. Who's this? Oh, Dr. Baker. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yes, I see. Okay. I'll take it from here.
So?
So, score one for youth and an eagle eye. You got the makings of a detective. Maybe I was lucky I had you along.
Uh-huh. The mark on his eyelid?
Yeah. Somebody shoved something really skinny and sharp right through his eye socket and into his brain. That's what caused the hemorrhage and his death.
So it was murder.
That's about the size of it.
Mm.
You got your case after all.
No, I have. I'm not sure I want it, that nice little old lady.
Mrs. Apfelbaum?
Yes.
We still got to build something that'll hold up in court.
Where do we start?
It's after midnight. I'll have the house staked out tonight just in case. We start early in the morning. Okay, Trout, here we are. Scene of the crime. Everybody out.
Okay. Where do we start, Sergeant? We're going to face Mrs. Applebaum first?
Nope. We'll check out all the other suspects. The patrol car phoned in. They're all home. But first, we'll have a look at Fender's apartment.
What for?
That's what we're going to be looking to find out. anything here in the bedroom, Detective?
No, Sergeant. You find out anything?
Yeah, a couple of things. I counted that money. $295. A lot of cash to have hanging around.
Well, it makes some people feel secure. I mean, like to have cash on hand.
Yeah. Two bank books, over $1,200 in one, $10,000 in the other.
What's in the cigar box?
Have a look. Smell.
Mmm. Grass.
Marijuana. Good stuff.
Well, you think he was a dealer? Grass, money, they go together, don't they?
Oh, not necessarily. The entries in the big bank book are all years old. The money's been there since the year one, just gathering interest.
Uh-huh, and the new bank book.
Chicken feed. A buyer, maybe, not a seller. But I got a notion where this grass came from.
Where?
Yeah, this is his rent book. A character named Dreiser. You remember Mrs. Applebaum called him a person?
The first floor back.
Yeah, check. He was always behind in his rent, it seems. Sometimes the old boy carried him for 2-3 months. Why?
He was a supplier? Or is that jumping to conclusions?
That ain't jumping. That's just plain adding up 2 and 2. Tell you what. Let's you and me go pay a visit to the first floor back. Mr. Dreiser? Mr. Dreiser? Open up! Police!
Hey, man, what goes with all the loud jive? I mean, like you're breaking my head.
Are you Mr. Dreiser?
Ooh, I am the one.
Detective Sergeant Bowles. This is my sidekick, Detective Trout.
Real nice. Solid. The mama and the papa. What can old Slats do for you?
I'd like to ask you a few questions, Mr. Dreiser. We come in?
Well, sure. Come on in. I'm clean. Just a little stretched out. You know what I mean? I got some coffee moving. You use some for what ails you?
We haven't got anything that ails us.
Oh, then you're lucky. You got it made, mamas and papas. Slats here, he's just cutting it. I mean, like, just. Excuse me.
Stoned.
To the gills.
And something a lot stronger than grass.
You know it. I stay one side of him, be ready for anything. I guess you know what happened here last night, Mr. Dreiser.
Oh, man. Is that hot? Last night?
Uh-huh. To the superintendent. You know he's dead.
He's what?
Dead.
How?
That's what we're trying to find out.
Well, don't look at me, man. I wasn't even here last night.
Where were you?
Well, now, that's no question for a doll to ask. I mean, you gotta protect your own doll, right?
Mr. Slats, are you trying to say you were with a woman?
Ah, crazy. You named it.
You want to give us her name?
Why?
Fender didn't just die. Someone killed him.
Oh, wow. You're not looking at me.
You were behind in your rent.
Well, I was, but I paid up last night.
What time?
Well, just like before 7 on my way out.
Didn't show in his rent book.
It was cash on the line, $295. There, I got his receipt right here.
Huh? That's a receipt, all right. But for what?
I don't dig you.
What was passing between you two besides grass? Any hard stuff?
Hard stuff? What are you talking about, man? Junk?
Yeah. Were you buying from Fender?
Well, I'm no user.
Well, what do? Push it?
Sister, lay back. No call to come on so hard. I'm clean.
Where were you last night around 9 o'clock?
Well, like I said, with my old woman.
What's her name?
No, I wouldn't want to get her mixed up in nothing. Hey, what are you doing, Fuzz? Get out of that drawer.
Hold it.
Now you hold it. Don't you touch nothing of mine.
There's one little item in here I wouldn't think of touching except to pick it up with my handkerchief. You mind if I borrow your ice pick?
What do you want it for?
I want to take it down to the morgue and see if it fits the hole above Saul Fender's eye where somebody drove something real sharp like this right into his brain.
What?
That's the way he died. Around 9 o'clock last night. Now, you still want to clam up about where you were then?
Man, I keep broadcasting. I couldn't have been here.
How come?
Because I was in Mount Pleasant then, 50 miles from here.
Prove it.
Come on, what kind of a roust is this? You ain't gonna make me take no fall for some murder rap.
No, let's look at it this way, punk. Now, now, don't tell me you haven't done time. I dig deep enough, I'll tie you into junk peddling. So the old man found out, was gonna throw you out or turn you over to the cops, and you were on a trip and used this on him.
No, no, I didn't.
This ain't no ordinary ice pick. It's sharp as a needle. And what do you need it for with an electric refrigerator? This is a weapon, and you know it.
Okay. Okay. I ain't standing still for being railroaded on no murder rap. I take a fall, it's gonna be for 1 to 5. Not the whole bundle. There's a pump jockey in Mount Pleasant will remember me and get me off the hook.
Why is that?
Because I hit his gas station last night. At 9 o'clock, he was backing off from that ice pick 50 miles from here.
Okay. Put your wrist behind your back. That's it.
How come you had a pick on me for handing Fender his ticket?
Well, you seem the only one who might have a motive.
You kidding? What about all the others?
Well, what about them?
Well, like old Professor Porter up there. Him and Fender used to be such great buddies. But last night, just as I was cutting out, he come on like a sore boil about something. When I left there was some kind of a Brinigan going on.
That was before 7.
So how do you know where he was at 9?
We'll check it out.
An old lonely heart's Dimby. There's a babe who's so hot for anything in pants, she even made a few passes at Fender. And man, when he brushed her off, she was ready to total him. And how about Mother Applebaum, huh? I mean, like, she may look like Whistler's old lady, but there's one tough little cookie. Her and that hat pin of hers.
What would she have against Mr. Fender?
Babes, he hated cats. I mean, like, they turned him off all the way. And anybody don't like her means the old cat is marked right off her books. Let me tell you.
Okay, okay, that's it. Move. We'll check them all out. Don't worry.
Well, too bad it couldn't have been him.
Hey there, babes. Cool it.
No, you cool it. You're lucky you're just a two-bit crook. It just may save your life. Stonehead back to the precinct while you check out Miss Dimby. You think he can handle it?
Well, a dried up sex star, 40-ish would-be sex kitten, I'll be a lot safer than you would.
You can have her. I'll take the professor as soon as I get back, then we'll compare notes.
I hope it turns out to be one of them.
Why?
Well, I liked old Mrs. Applebaum. I don't want it to be her.
Listen, detective. First thing you gotta learn in this job is don't form any attachments. And the second is, don't kid yourself there's any romance. And forget all about the books, the movies, and the TV shows. The way it is in real life, 99 chances out of 100, the perpetrator is the obvious one.
Which means Mrs. Applebaum.
Which means Mrs. Applebaum.
To be a very large or unexpected miracle to get Mrs. Applebaum off the hook, as Detective Marion Trout is due to find out when both her other suspects turn up with airtight alibis. And yet, but that will have to remain till I return shortly with the third act.
Hear ye, all residents are being offered the opportunity to become drown-proof.
Hey, Bud. What's this drown-proof bit?
Can you swim, sir?
No.
Then the YMCA wants to drown-proof you and every other non-swimmer in town by teaching you how to swim.
No kidding.
That's right. Think of the fun and exercise you'll have swimming, and you'll be able to enjoy all the other water sports, too, in safety. That's something to celebrate in this bicentennial year.
What's the bicentennial got to do with it?
How did George Washington get to Trenton?
We crossed the Delaware in a rowboat.
Sir, would the father of our country have set foot in a rowboat if he couldn't swim? He had to set a good example.
Like father, like son, eh?
And like mother, like daughter. Martha knew how to swim, too. Everybody's welcome at the Y to learn how to swim. So drown-proof yourself and your family and make George Washington proud of you. Hear ye, hear ye.
I'm Joan Sampson of the National Foundation for Jewish Genetic Diseases, and I have a health message for Jewish people. Sometimes the games people play can be deadly because they're played with the lives of children. Take genetic roulette. That's the game so many Jewish people play when they decide to have children without genetic counseling. How do they play it? By not knowing the facts about 6 inherited diseases peculiar to Jewish people. Don't gamble. No child should be born to suffer. Help prevent a tragedy in your family. Learn about these 6 crippling diseases. Many diseases strike particular ethnic groups. These are the ones that we know can strike Jewish people. Learn how they can strike without warning and how they can be prevented through counseling, screening, and testing. Write today for further information to the National Foundation for Jewish Genetic Diseases at 608 Fifth Avenue, New York, New York, 10020.
Right at this moment, Marion Trout is almost regretting her transfer to the Detective Bureau. As a uniformed policewoman, she has faced death before, but then it was impersonal, not something she had to become involved in. A murder investigation, she is finding, is different. Now, she herself is committed to hunting down a murderer that might be a bright, attractive old lady to whom she has taken a liking. But in spite of Sergeant Bowles' conviction, she doesn't have to face that yet. For the moment, her quarry is Miss Dimby.
Who is it?
Sorry to bother you, Miss Dimby. I'm a police officer.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear me, you don't look like a police officer.
Well, I should have said detective. My shield and identification.
Oh, I don't know what to say.
You haven't heard about your superintendent?
Oh, you mean about his heart attack?
Mm.
Oh, yes, so... so sad, so sudden. It was a terrible shock. I felt so guilty about my feeling of relief for the moment before I... Oh, well, perhaps you should come in.
Thank you.
Yes, such a dreadful, dreadful shock.
Mm. What did you mean, feeling of relief?
Oh, well, I never should have mentioned it. It's just that it's so difficult for a young, single girl to be in a house that's practically infested by men.
Mm.
One gets a little tired of, you know, being pestered.
Mm.
Particularly the older men. Although Mr. Fender was very sweet, but he was persistent. Well, one must speak well of the dead.
Mm.
Won't you step into my parlor?
Oh, thank you, Miss Dimby.
Oh, please, sit down. Oh, you don't mind if I go on with my knitting, do you?
No. Not at all.
Oh. Well, I have so many beaux, you know, men in my life. So many favors to return, and I am not well to do, so I knit them scarves or gloves.
Hmm. Did you know that Mr. Fender was murdered?
Oh. Murdered? Oh, but... But how?
Well, he was stabbed in the eye.
Oh.
Something very sharp was driven into his brain.
How dreadful. What sort of thing?
Well, something like a skewer or an ice pick or a knitting needle.
Oh.
Miss Dimby, where were you last night between 8:30 and 9:30?
Oh, why, I was at a moving picture show.
Ah, well, what did you see?
Oh, why, it was lovely. Mm. So artistic and cultural. The, that exquisite production by the great Spanish director, Mikael Lugano, La Paloma. Have you seen it?
Oh, no. What theater?
Oh, the Fine Arts.
Oh, that beautiful little theater on the southwest corner of Broadwalk and 24.
Yes, that's the one.
Yes, well, then you couldn't have been here anywhere near 9 o'clock.
Oh, heavens, no.
Well, in that case, there's no need to ask you any more questions. No. Don't bother. I'll let myself out.
Oh, well, you're sure that's quite satisfactory?
I'm sure, Miss Dimby. You gave me just what I need. Sergeant.
Damn professor slipped out on me. What is it?
You don't have to look any further. I've got her.
Who?
The murderer.
The Dimby dame?
She gave me an alibi. That she was at a movie at the Fine Arts Theater at Boardwalk and 24th last night. I trapped her with the address, and get this, she's a knitting nut.
I don't follow.
Now listen, there's no Fine Arts Theater at that address. It's just a hole in the ground for a new building and knitting needles. A steel knitting needle. Wouldn't that be a perfect weapon for a sex-starved old maid to use against a guy who maybe turned her down?
Oh, a police person? Miss Detective?
Yes.
Could I see you a moment, please?
Go ahead. I'll go with you.
Oh, I'd rather see the lady alone, please.
I think I'd better come along.
Oh, dear. Well, all right. Come in, please. I'm afraid I have a confession to make.
Well, you see, Sergeant.
I lied to you earlier about being at the Fine Arts.
You weren't at the movies?
Oh, yes, I was at the movies, but not at the one I said I was.
Yes, well, then where were you?
Well, I... It's really a matter of, one might say, morally outraged curiosity. I had gone to see a perfectly dreadful and vile thing called the story of W.
Oh, well, I can see why you might have wanted to keep that a secret. That their story of W, Detective, is X-rated. It's what you call your hardcore pornography.
You've got to be kidding.
Well, what's the difference, Dimby, what you saw? Unless you could prove you were there.
Oh, well, I can prove I was at the one.
Oh.
Well, the manager knows me. It's a little embarrassing going right up to the... Well, he lets me in quietly.
And how long were you at this movie?
From 7 to 11 o'clock. I'm afraid I sat through it twice.
Glad you enjoyed it.
Oh, you needn't look down your nose at me. And instead of harassing me with your police brutality, you should be after the real culprit.
Yes, and who's that?
The almighty professor. Butter wouldn't melt in his mouth, always the gentleman. You should have heard him and Mr. Fender going at it hammer and tongs as I did when I left for the... when I went out. And something else.
What was that, ma'am?
Well, the door was open as I passed, and I saw him hit Mr. Fender over the head.
With what, Miss Dimby?
With his umbrella.
If you look at this umbrella, you can see he must have hit him pretty hard. Some of the ribs are broken.
Well, first of all, we don't know it's his umbrella.
She said she saw him throw it out this morning.
She says. Anyway, so what? There wasn't a mark on Fender's head. How can you hurt anyone with a light umbrella? And anyways, the time is all wrong.
Yeah, well, maybe he came back.
Well, here's the amusement center. That's what I intend to find out. Now. Hey, excuse me, Professor Porter?
Morning. You want to play $1 a game unless you win, and then I pay you $2. Take board number 7 and choose white or black.
Excuse me, I don't want to play. I want to talk to you. My credentials.
Police? We can go over here by the weight machine. It's the quietest place in the house. Very well, Sergeant. You have exactly 1 minute.
I gather you were a friend of Saul Fender's.
Saul, yes, yes. We played chess together, and why?
When was the last time you saw him?
About 6:30 last night, when I went home for dinner before I returned here.
What time did you return to work?
It was sometime before 7.
And you got home at 11:30?
That's right. How did
Between
you...
those hours, you were sitting at your usual place in the window playing chess.
Except for traveling to and from, yes. What happened to Saul?
He was murdered.
What? Well, you don't think I had anything to do with it?
Not if you were here at 9 o'clock, no. You're out of it if you're telling the truth. And don't worry. I intend to make sure that's just what you're telling. Yeah? You sure? Yeah, okay.
Well, what did the lab say?
No trace of blood on the hat pin. Well, that don't mean nothing. It could have been washed off.
Then you're going to arrest her?
I don't know. We got motive, opportunity, means, but... ain't much of a case. No witnesses, no proof they quarreled.
Yes, and yet we know Professor Porter did.
What's the difference? That was 2 hours earlier, and he...
What is it?
I just thought of something. Who usually establishes the time of death?
Well, the medical examiner or whatever doctor they send over.
Only this time he didn't. We told him because of the phone call. But supposing by that time he was already dying and was only beginning to realize it.
What are you talking about?
I don't know. I'm going to get Doc Prouty at the hospital and maybe he can explain it to me.
What are you...
It's all right, Mr. Porter. Come on in. We've been waiting for you.
You're that policeman who came to see me. Who is this woman?
This is Detective Trout.
What you're doing here?
Well, we want to ask you some questions.
Yes, Mrs. Applebaum is quite correct. I did quarrel with my poor friend Saul. We had a terrible one.
And you did hit him?
I'm ashamed to say I did. I hit him over the head.
With your umbrella?
Yes, but the provocation was very great. I ask you to imagine. My life is not much, but I have my pride. I could have been one of the greats. A Spassky, a Bobby Fischer. But I was never given the chance. Instead, I work in a window, playing with fools who have no hope of beating me, goggled at by idiots from the street, as if I were in a cage at the zoo. When Saul came to the house, he was lonely. He had no companions. I taught him to play chess. I played with him to amuse him. I even showed him the unbeatable reply to the Museo Gambit, a secret only I know. And you know how he repaid me? Yesterday, knowing I was sick and not myself, when I had 10 games going, he came, he, the pupil to the master, and used my own trick to defeat me in the goldfish bowl. He shamed me in front of all the world. I was mad enough to kill him.
I'm afraid that's just what you did.
What?
Is this the umbrella you hit him with?
Well, yes. Yes, that's my umbrella. I threw it away because some of the ribs got broken. But that... Well, a little hit on the head from a light umbrella couldn't have killed him.
Only it did. One of these broken ribs jabbed straight into the hollow of his eye and right into his brain.
Oh, no. No. I never meant... But wait a minute. You said he was alive at 9 o'clock. We quarreled at least 2 hours before that.
Sometimes it takes time for a man to die. The doctors tell us that the hemorrhage caused by the wound could easily have taken 2 hours to cause his final death.
Good Lord. I suppose you're going to arrest me.
The charge will be manslaughter. But we'll have to arrest you.
But I don't care about the charge. I'm only sick to my soul that I could have caused another human being's death. I think I shall have a better judge and a punishment to fit the crime.
Mr. Porter, are you all right?
No, my dear. I'm very far from all right. It's my heart. There are some pills in... Oh, no.
Which pocket, sir?
It doesn't really matter. It's better this way. The end game is played out. This time it's checkmate. And I'm the loser.
Some time ago, outside a New York bar, two men got into a fight. One of them lashed out at the other with an umbrella. After the fight was stopped, the man who had been hit by the umbrella continued on his night out. And it wasn't until he returned home some 2 hours later that he collapsed and died. Truth, as I said in the beginning, is stranger than fiction, except when it is borrowed to make a good story. I'll be back shortly.
Okay, Marion, hand me the paddle.
But Teddy, that river looks so nasty.
Yeah, a bit rugged, all right. Nothing I can't handle, though.
Yeah, but you've never done this sort of thing before, and I think...
First time for everything, Marion. It takes a little guts.
Well, I just don't think you're doing...
Man needs a little excitement in his life, Marion, but good for the soul.
Howard won't like it if you bang up his canoe.
I won't. Now, give me a push. Easy.
But you're like this.
Ah, stop it, Marion. I'm a grown man.
Teddy!
Later, baby!
Ted's off on a great adventure.
Geronimo!
While he may not survive. Not that it's foolish to shoot the rapids, just foolish for a complete novice like Ted. If you want a little excitement in your boating recreation, that's fine. But the American Red Cross urges you to protect yourself with knowledge, skill, and the proper safety equipment. After all, why do it the hard way?
I suppose the motives for the crime of homicide are countless. Some of them are as unspeakable and as savage as the crime itself. But the most macabre and terrible thing about it is that by far the most of them are so small and unreasonable, except to the people involved. How few of them are as neatly solved and resolved in the words of Genesis, a life for a life, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. Our cast included Marion Haley, Robert Dryden, Court Benson, and Bryna Rayburn. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. And now, a preview of our next tale.
How long can we stay here in this town, Jimmy?
Oh, I don't know. You must admit it's a lucrative location.
Yeah, but we ain't selling much of the hair store.
We don't have to. We made $200 yesterday, 50 from the sheriff, and 150 from Mr. Julius Troutwine.
Jimmy, he did mark those bills, didn't he?
Sure.
Well, then how did the marks disappear?
Millie, honey, lay it all to the account of the magic hair restorer and its many uses. Remember, in a town where there isn't much of a bald-headed trade, we sell it as a spot remover.
Ah.
In this business, any time a man gives you money, always check the bill.
But, Jimmy, how long can we stay in this hotel?
Why? Don't you like it?
Oh, but it's so expensive.
We've got us a money tree in this town, and we're going to cultivate it.
This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
KIXI in Seattle. Stay tuned for the news from CBS.
CBS News. World Bank President Robert McNamara says in Manila that both rich and poor nations of the world must take measures to eradicate poverty, or hundreds of millions of people will face an unspeakably grim future. I'm Mike Stanley reporting on the CBS Radio Network. McNamara spoke to the opening session of the joint annual meeting of the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund. Spreading blame among rich, poor, and not-so-poor lands, McNamara complained that after a year of intense debate in the UN and other forums, there's been no agreement on the level of additional assistance to be provided to the developing nations. Opening the session, Philippines President Ferdinand Marcos pictured an improving situation in need of help. He said the global rebellion of the poor has begun to conquer poverty, but said more capital has to be generated for those in need, and terms and conditions for international lending must be improved. About 2 miles from the convention center where the world financial leaders convened, some 3,000 demonstrators marched Sunday night, demanding an end to the four-year-old martial law regime of Marcos. The demonstrators, including Roman Catholic nuns, priests, and seminarians, splashed denunciations of the regime in red paint on walls freshly whitewashed as part of a program to clean up Manila for the International Monetary Meeting. Independent presidential candidate Eugene McCarthy says he'll announce this week the men he would place in key posts in his cabinet if elected. But he says he probably would leave the selection of a vice president up to the Electoral College. The former senator from Wisconsin said his campaign is not limited.
I don't see my campaign as being a regional campaign or a single-issue campaign. If you're going to have two parties, they have to be responsive. They can't begin to protect themselves, which John Adams said would happen if they became irresponsible. He said the worst thing you could have in a republic like ours was to have politics controlled by two strong political parties, or factions, as he called them. And he predicted that they would act just about the way the Republicans and the Democrats are acting now.
McCarthy appeared on the CBS News broadcast Face the Nation. Appearing on the same broadcast was American Independent Party presidential candidate Lester Maddox. He was critical of his predecessor as that party's nominee, George Wallace, for supporting Democratic candidate Jimmy Carter.
I've, in my own thoughts, considered that Governor Wallace was the man that would never join the pointed head bureaucrats, or the enemy, so to speak, and that these millions of Americans, men, women, boys, and girls, tall, sweated, sacrificed, gave of themselves to the cause of Governor Wallace's efforts. I think he abdicated his responsibility and duty to these people.
The future of Agriculture Secretary Earl Butz remains in doubt, with White House sources reported to have indicated that if he doesn't resign in the uproar over his widely quoted racial slur, President Ford probably will be forced to dump him, lest the Republican ticket be further damaged. The New York Daily News says White House officials are hoping Butz will do the gentlemanly thing and resign. A top aide to Butz, California Farmers for Ford Chairman Donald Brock, told CBS News he spoke to the secretary as recently as Sunday morning and was told by Butz that he hadn't made up his mind what to do. U.S. Ambassador to the U.N. William Scranton, calling the Butz remark revolting, said the GOP would be better off if the secretary quit. Scranton said the remark could have international implications.
Anything of this sort coming out of a person in a high position in our government or any other government at any time is abhorrent to me, and I'm sure to any other person who does not believe in racism in any form or substance, and I'm sure it will hurt in the United Nations.
Scranton appeared on NBC's Meet the Press. Talks between the United Auto Workers and the Ford Motor Company are to resume Monday. The two sides met until just before midnight after holding separate sessions earlier in the day, leading to hopes that the 20-day-old strike is near an end. More news in a moment.
Hello, this is Paulette Goddard. This year marks the 30th anniversary of CARE, C-A-R-E, the International Aid and Development Organization, which provides needy people around the world with food, tools, and equipment, the means for them to help themselves. Now, when CARE first began its work just after the Second World War, I recognized how important its work was, and I did what I could to help. Today, the needs are still great. There are hungry children and desperate people who need your help. Your contributions to CARE help provide food and the means to grow food. Tools, equipment, and know-how to build roads, safer water systems, clinics, feeding centers, and schools. In the American tradition of generosity and concern for people, won't you help these needy people free themselves from hunger, poverty, and despair?
Send your check or money order to CARE, Box 576, New York, 10016.
The World Health Organization representative in Kenya has sent a doctor to Juba in the southern Sudan to investigate reports that a mystery disease in the area has claimed at least 80 lives. The WHO office in Nairobi said it has received information indicating that some people who have contracted the highly contagious virus disease have died within 24 hours. Medical investigators thus far have been unable to isolate the disease, which is reported to have some symptoms similar to those of cholera, typhoid, and yellow fever. Information reaching Nairobi indicates that the disease is spreading more toward the border with Zaire than toward Kenya. Mike Stanley, CBS News.